We will worship you.
Good news and shoes. It's Jesus in the everything, me and you. The good news and shoes.
This is the Jesus Good News Station, WCNO, Palm City.
Good news and shoes.
The following is a paid program. The content is provided by HF Martech. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership are not responsible for the content. Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. And now, the host of the Team Martech program, Joe Martech.
And we are on the air.
We are.
And I am Joe Martech, and this is the Team Martech Hour. It's also called the Vince and Joe Hour, because...
Well, because the other team members don't usually show
it's
up.
It's a rare day. We always get Alan Love, which is a special guest member.
Right.
Who happens to be our resident retired prosecuting attorney. We were kind of joking today, Alan was, which after he fell asleep on the other show we had earlier today.
I'm wide awake now.
Anyway... We were just kind of joking when Alan was a prosecuting attorney. You know, sometimes attorneys have a bit of a power symbol. They walk into places and they kind of part the waters a little bit. Well, mm-hmm. When he used to walk in and said, I'm assistant district attorney, prosecuting attorney, he said, boy, I got appointments faster than anybody in the world. Yeah. Now that he's retired, nobody will answer the door anymore.
Well, they slam it in the face now when he comes in.
But it was just kind of, am I paraphrasing, getting close, Alan, to what you said?
You can say what you want, Joe. It's your show.
I know. It was a good thing, though. Anyway, starting back in around 2004, Joe Martech, financial advisor, Greg Fasula, attorney, Dan Warren, independent insurance agent, started doing radio shows. And we've been doing them ever since, and we had no clue we'd be doing them this long. But the concept was simple. People ask questions that no one person can have all the answers to. So, in my not too humble opinion, if you're a credible professional, you align yourself with other credible professionals in order to help your clients. So when clients would ask me questions about taxes, well, Vince Rizzino for the last 5 years or so has been a part of this, CPA, not only a CPA, but a forensic CPA, ex-college professor. He brings to the team a wealth of knowledge, and the poor guy is going to get worked to death because of tax reform or the new tax code, which is how many pieces of paper are you getting a day now?
Practically every 2 hours now. But you know what they call it? Huh? It's the Accountants Income and Retirement Act.
I know, I like that. They were going to eliminate accountants all of a sudden.
It's almost more complex now than it was before.
Well, you know, and every time they simplify it, they add another 10,000 pages.
Yeah, it probably. Yeah. Probably, but there's so many now that you got the basic law that'll
right.
be signed.
Right.
Then you need the IRS to issue regulations to then expand upon what it means by all these laws. They're going to be the finer points. And there are a lot of finer points.
Well, the only good news about it from your standpoint, it doesn't affect 2017's taxes.
Thank God.
Can you imagine if it was retroactive for
Thank
this year?
Thank God. No, they never would have happened because the IRS takes months to get their system in place to accommodate all the changes.
Right.
So they need a year
to get this going. But the good news is, from what they were saying today, is that the working man who's getting a paycheck, whose taxes are withheld, in February will get a raise. And he'll start getting more money in his paycheck. Well, you know, the average person... They don't pay a whole lot of attention to politicians and all the stuff that goes on. What they're looking at is their paycheck.
Right.
And, hey, we're living paycheck to paycheck, and, hey, what do we care? If we get $10 more a week, that's found money. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it could be a We're hoping that this is going to be a revolution and that it will stimulate the economy and do what it's supposed to do and increase people's paychecks and get the unemployment down to a point where people get raises. Anyway, it looks pretty positive.
Well, you know, even the smallest amount of cash in the pockets of taxpayers, Joe, is a good thing.
Amen.
Because that's what's going to stimulate companies to expand, which is all what they're claiming is what was going to happen. They're going to get all this money from the corporate tax breaks,
right.
And then invest in plant equipment and so on. My answer to that is, yeah, it sounds good on paper, but I don't know how much of that they're actually going to invest unless there's demand, and demand's got to come from people.
There you go.
And the people have to have the money.
If a person working gets $10 more a week, the odds are good they're going to spend $9 more a week. In the economy, times 100 million people, it could make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't care what everybody says, companies don't spend money. Well, let me tell you, no company spends money they don't have to.
Right.
If you are making widgets, and you're making two widgets a week, and you're getting by, and that's all you have demand for, you're not going to hire more people to make more widgets. But if somebody says, we're going to make two more widgets a week, you have to expand your factory.
So, or if they bring back manufacturing jobs to this country, and then they'll need to hire people. There'll be more in the economy to go around. They're going to grease the wheels.
And what's happening, because of this is a tech society, a lot of these jobs are going to pay pretty well because they're not going to be like when I was pumping gas as a kid, making my buck an hour, or shoveling hamburger in the meat factory for $1.25 an hour. I said, well, I got a big raise. I went to $1.25 an hour. Mm-hmm. Is this taking you back, Dave, a little bit?
Way back.
Way back. So anyway, it was a very, very positive meeting today when I was watching it on the tube, and it was a love fest for Donald Trump. And we're all hoping, and we were talking earlier off stage, that this is actually something that's going to happen good. 1-888-221-8990. It's a toll-free from any place. You should write that number down and keep it. Call us. 1-888-221-8990. Any questions you might have, and especially for Vince Rizzino, because he's got paperwork in front of him and the tax thing. By the way, Vince, they haven't sent you calculations yet on how this thing is going to work, but I've heard about the tax brackets and standard deductions.
We have there's no regulation. So all you have is the basics. Like, for example, they're going to eliminate itemized deductions, which you know about. One of the good things I noticed that they stuck in is they're going to keep the 7.5% floor for medical deductions.
Uh-huh.
Where under the original plan, the House plan, they were going to eliminate all medical deductions.
There you go.
No itemized deductions. So they kept that in. So that was one of these last minute, we had to give up something.
Negotiation.
So let's go negotiation. So they kept that in there. But they brought back the AMT, which for those you don't know is the alternative minimum tax. And I think that was done at the request of those that claimed that it was too beneficial to the higher end people, high income people. So they brought back the AMT because originally the AMT or the alternative tax was another ghost system. So first you calculated your income taxes on one method, the traditional method, let's call it. And then you had to do it under this other method and see which tax,
which one was
higher.
Well, you know, and how many times, and I'm not a tax person, but when people say, Joe, what should I do? And I said, hey, have your accountant do it both ways.
Mm-hmm.
Find out which is better. If you itemize and you can save a few bucks, that's what you do.
We do it anyway, as a matter of course. In fact, I ask all my clients to give me all of their itemized deductions because 90% of the time, their standard exceeds the itemized. So they take the standard anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why this new tax bill, by raising the standard deduction, I think is going to help a lot of Floridians in particular.
Here was the other thing, and I heard, but I didn't understand all of it, but there were some benefits for the small businessman.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And then, but there were eliminations for certain professional services.
Yes. And I'm happy to say.
They got some of those back.
They got some of it back. What they said was, yes, they're eliminating specified service trades or businesses, which basically includes accounting, health, law, consulting, athletics, financial services.
All of us.
All that income, all of us around the table, would not be subject to lower rates or the deduction, if you will.
We wouldn't get the benefit.
But
even if we went corporations or whatever?
Well, if you want to be a regular C-Corp, you could bypass that piece of it.
If it pays you to be a C-Corp.
If it pays you to be a C-Corp, right. But even though, if you're a professional,
Now, if you're a one-man show or one or two or three people, the C-Corp probably would be
I mean, I don't think that would be necessarily the way you want to go, just to beat this.
Yeah, I understand.
But here's the thing. The exclusion from the lower tax rates for those things are beginning, you know, for those services are going to be phased in.
Uh-huh.
So people with a taxable income in excess of $157,500 or $315,000 on a joint return, it looks like you'd still be able to get the benefit of the lower rates on that income.
Uh-huh.
Now, that wasn't in the original plans.
But you can't.
Neither one of them.
But you can't get the benefit if you make less?
No, you can't get it if you make more.
If you make more.
If you make less, you would.
Okay. Yeah. Well.
So that's helping the smaller businesses.
There you go. Yeah, because you take a small business guy who's, hey, it's hard starting any business, and most businesses for the first year or two or sometimes longer, if you're break even, you're lucky. You know, it's hard work. You know, I think it was Paul Harvey years ago. Remember Paul Harvey on the radio? He says, you want to make a good investment? He says, take any immigrant and back him in any business he wants to go into, because they know how to work.
Yes, they do.
You know, and they just do. 1-888-221-8990. 888-toll-free. 221-8990. Now, what else have you
got
there?
Well, the other thing, the interesting thing, Joe, is this benefit we're talking about comes to the small businessman in the form of a 20% of revenue deduction.
Meaning?
That you're allowed to deduct as a normal business expense 20% of the revenue that you generated.
Automatic.
This is built into this.
You don't have to itemize.
Well, no. This is on a Schedule C or a partner in a partnership or an S corporation shareholder.
Vince, let me ask you a question to put it in a little bit of context. Say your revenue of your business is $1 million. Are you saying that you can take $200,000 of that right off the top and it's not going to be taxable? Is that what you're saying?
It'd be a deduction. Okay. If there's a lot of regulations, and I hate to waffle on you on this, but that's what they're telling us in the play. It says for each qualified business, the taxpayer is allowed to deduct 20% of the qualified business income with respect to that trade.
Now, question. Can this be a sole proprietor business, or does it have to be a corp, or do you know?
These are basically qualified businesses. They don't talk, it really would be, it doesn't include S corporation shareholders, reasonable compensation, but the profit, yes, it would be. So it'd be S corps, partnerships, sole proprietorships.
But it won't work for service people.
It will if you make less than $315,000 on a joint basis.
Okay.
Or $157,000 if you're single.
So if you're gross, that's adjusted gross, 157.
It would be taxable income.
Taxable after expenses.
After expenses.
Okay, well, good. I don't have to worry.
So this is really good for the small business person. Very, very good. Yeah. All small business.
Another thing I've been seeing with the pundits on television is the lowering of the tax from 35% to 21% for corporations.
Right.
And what they were saying is they feel that will stimulate mergers and acquisitions. Do you feel that that's related? Do you agree with that?
Well, I think what it's going to do is it's going to give more cash flow to businesses that they don't already have. But here's the thing. Businesses are pretty flush with cash right now. A lot of corporations have a lot of money. And so there's already right now, without the tax cuts, it's probably one of the biggest years for M&A. Would you agree with that, Joe?
Yeah, but the thing with M&A to me does not necessarily generate more jobs. When you have XYZ company buying ABC company.
The opposite.
They
merge them together and eliminate duplicity.
You eliminate jobs, yeah. So mergers and acquisitions are good for the stockholders, for the owners, but not necessarily good for the economy. That's a dichotomy.
When two giants get together, what's the first thing they look at? Well, do I need two presidents?
Sure.
Do I need two CFOs? Do I need whatever, two chairmen? They usually don't. So usually they
can start adding. Yeah. Anyway, on the other hand,
it's 1 + 1 =
when a company is more profitable,
4.
If it's a publicly traded company, here comes the stock owners, and here the stock market keeps going up because the basic rules are this: if a company's making money, they have to pay it out to their owners, which are the stock owners.
Right.
So it'll help everybody out there with a 401k in theory, individual investors. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later in the show, but I wanted to get that in because, you know, like last year, The S&P 500, the Dow, the NASDAQ, all were up in excess of 20% for the whole year, which was a wonderful year. Not since Bill Clinton was in did we have these 4 and 5 years where 20, 25% years in the S&P 500. So is this going to continue? Well, there's three schools of thought. There's the optimist, the pessimist, and the realist. The optimist is looking for 10 to 15% next year. The pessimist is looking for minus, and the realist is looking for between 5 and 10. So I've been listening. Now, who's right? We won't know until the end of next year and what things come along to stimulate more business and stimulate more economy. But the reality of this thing, in theory, according to everything I read and hear, it should bring money in over from overseas. Companies will repatriate.
That's a different section of the law, Joe. It's not on tax. Yeah, it's related. It's related. But this is taking money that's already overseas. They haven't paid taxes
right.
on it. They're going to bring it back in at a reduced rate and hope that the companies take that money and invest it in the economy. Now, here's what they probably will do. You mentioned a couple of things. They also might buy back their own stock.
Right, right.
And that's something else they can do. And I don't know if that necessarily helps anybody but existing shareholders.
It doesn't really help anybody.
But you're buying back your shares. You're also, they're going to increase dividends, which will help
there
the market.
You go. There
it
you
will
go.
Help the market.
Right.
And also what they can do is the third thing would be to invest in plant and equipment.
There you go.
But if they don't have the demand for the plant and equipment.
If they don't have a demand for the product, there's no reason in the world to buy equipment. But I did understand, if I heard this right, you can expense
yes.
capital expenditures, meaning equipment.
Well, that's a good point, Joe. I was just going to bring that up. They increased the 179, what's called Section 179. That's an IRS code, 179, which covers the expensing of equipment. Right now, companies in 17 and prior, you could expense up to $500,000 of purchases.
Per year,
100% of it. So you didn't have to subject it to depreciation.
Right.
What does that mean? You don't wait for 1/5 every year for five years.
Right, right.
You could take the whole thing now. Well, that saves companies a lot of money
in
taxes.
Time. Big time.
Well, they've raised that $500,000 to $1 million.
Okay. Now, if you're a great big corporation, is it only $1 million?
It's $1 million. No, if it goes up, it would increase and it phases out up to $2.5 million. It increases the phase out, meaning. Once you have acquisitions above the $2.5 million, so let's say you bought $2.5 million worth of assets, you could, you know, it phases out between $1 million and $2.5 million.
Slowly.
You don't get to take the 100% of
it. So then they depreciate the rest of
that
asset over a period of time.
Yeah.
Well, you know, listen, all I'm looking at is 98% of the people that are listening, or maybe 99%, are looking at a paycheck. And if that paycheck can get better and your quality of life can get better, hallelujah.
Well, we have some good stuff on the individual side, Joe. They're going to expand, and this is great for young families. They're expanding the child tax credit, for
right.
example. And that is existing at $1,000 now. It's going up to $2,000 per qualifying child.
So if you've got three kids at home and you're a single mom, she's going to get a bigger tax refund than she has been getting.
Well, it's not the refund, it's a credit. I don't think these are refundable credits, meaning you don't get paid for them.
Oh, you don't get paid.
But if you have children and you pay tax, you're going to get reduced taxes.
It's
going to come dollar for dollar off your taxes.
But you won't get a
refundable?
No,
I don't know.
Don't think so.
It's going to phase out, though. But they've also, here's something else. They have another non-refundable credit they just introduced, Joe. These are $500 credit for qualifying dependents who are not your children.
Remember that fellow that called in and was talking about his girlfriend for 9 or 10 years?
Yeah.
I wonder. So how would it be a $500 credit for a dependent?
Well, let's just say, if you're not even adopted, let's just say you picked up some, you have a relative or a friend and you took their child in and they become a qualified dependent of yours because you're providing more than half of their
right.
support.
Right,
live
right,
in your,
right.
Live
right.
in your house for the whole year and all that. Then they would qualify as your child for purposes of this credit.
Nice.
Yeah, so you get $500 for that per child.
Okay. Well,
and $2,000 for your own children.
There you go.
I can add up.
Hey, I'm telling you. 1-888-221-8990. 888-221-8990. Now, Alan, you're sitting back there listening. Don't you have any? I'm trying to keep pushing Vince to give us more and more information on this thing, but you have any?
Well, I have a couple of interesting things as far as Wall Street today. You know, the old adage, buy on the rumor, sell on the news. Well, it happened today after the tax bill was officially passed. We had minor losses in the averages today. The Dow was down 0.1%, and the S&P 500 and NASDAQ were down less than 0.1%. But I think the interesting story of the day was the oldest and first member of the Dow, General Electric, in this year where the Dow has gone up over 25%.
Right.
General Electric hit a new 52-week low today.
Wow.
At $17.45.
And they were the sacred company, remember?
They were.
Forever. General Electric was as big as some governments.
Jack Welch did a wonderful job with that company.
It's going to be very interesting to see what the powers that be that control the Dow. The owners of the Wall Street Journal control the Dow. They make the decision of
which companies
who's
are going to
stay in the Dow 30. And, you know, occasionally they do make changes in the Dow. It's going to be interesting to see whether GE bounces back in the next few years and stays a member of the Dow, or if they're going to replace it with something that is more reflective of the volatility of the market.
Right.
Volatility seems to be the word. And of course, you look at some of the cryptocurrencies now that can go 10-15% in an hour. It's getting ridiculous.
And we had a phone call today on the other station that we do from Bulldog, who was trying to talk to us about cryptocurrencies. I mean, I think Dan, Alan, and I, we just kind of glazed over because I don't understand it, period. And I can't sell it. So, I mean, it doesn't pay me to even learn.
Can anybody explain what a crypto castle is? I saw that this morning.
Crypto castle now?
A crypto castle. I never heard that term before.
I haven't either.
They didn't really describe it.
What was,
for me, maybe because I came in late to the interview, but they were interviewing
this person. What was the chain? What was the name of the thing, Alan? He called it a...
Blockchain.
Blockchain.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that, I was listening to another station when they changed their name and it added blockchain to it. Their stock went up 300% in a week.
Yeah.
Well, that's going to, but they're claiming that's going to be revolutionary.
Well, that's what
accounting systems are going to be using as blockchain accounting.
Well, anyway.
From what I understand, it's a way of distributing transactions and locking them in place so nobody can change anything.
Well, that's what he was saying, was that this high-tech computer systems are not hackable. Well, that's so much for that, you know, because that doesn't seem logical, because everything we've ever done has been hacked, or from governments to most secrets in the whole world.
It sounds like it's a distributed system, Joe, which means you couldn't possibly get all the pieces together to make sense out of it.
Right.
You could probably hack one piece, but you'd need to hack all the pieces to figure out what's
all
going
I know
on.
Is it's just new stuff that we'd never even heard of, and now all of a sudden it's becoming almost mainstream.
To be honest with you, I'm of the mentality that my computer person that I use, he's very savvy in all of these things, and I said, well, what do I need to know? And he pointed to one little button on the computer, and he said, this is your on-off switch. If you press this and your screen gets light, that's what you want. And when I get that, I'm thrilled.
That's like
some techie, right? Here we go.
It's like the woman when she first got a computer, and she calls up the company and says, I can't get it to work. She says, I got the pedal on the floor and I keep pushing on it, but it's not doing anything. So the tech said, you know what, lady, I don't think you're ready for a computer. So put it back in the box and send it back.
Really. Bury in the backyard, you get more out of it.
It was my ex-wife, bank caller, said she was overdrawn, so she went down to the bank and wrote him a check.
Oh.
1-888. We're not here to do this, folks, all the time, but once in a while we're tempted and we just have to sneak in some of these little one-liners. 1-888-221-8990. We also have two other members of the group I didn't talk about, Ms. Victoria Lloyd, Remax of Stewart. Now, here comes another question, because they were talking today about people exiting high-price, high-tax states.
Yes.
Now, look at New Jersey, New York,
Connecticut,
California,
Massachusetts.
Now, whether that happens or not, this is a good question, but here's Florida with no state income tax.
Yet.
yet. Well, and probably won't, the way things are going, because we
need a constitutional amendment to do it.
Yeah.
But they may be forced to do it if they keep getting an influx of more and more people.
Well, but more and more influx, they're taxing these people, plus tourism is taxed like crazy. You know,
we're not talking about tourism, though. We're talking about people living
here. Well, I know that, but I'm saying to say, if you're in a real estate developing business, you have to pay for roads, all kinds of stuff that's adjacent to that property before you can even build. So impact fees, quote, what they charge up front before you can even get a permit to build.
It's true,
something.
But you got continuing costs.
Those prices,
Joe,
keep going
up. You
got up.
Continuing costs of hospitals and
roads
and continuing.
On and on.
Schools, education, and so there's continuing costs of maintaining
the population.
Well, the
only good news, I wouldn't say only good news, but one of the pieces of news in Florida, you know, old people don't have too many kids.
But if you get an influx of people coming from the north or from the south, you'll see more children.
Well, but they have to have jobs. There comes another problem. It's a service industry state. We don't have very few manufacturing jobs that are traditional in the Rust Belt and places up north where they have big factories.
Well, they used to have that.
Yeah, yeah. Used to. Ah, well,
maybe it'll come back.
Maybe. 1-888-221-8990. And then Mike Paulus, mortgage broker. Boy, what he has done for people has just been staggering. And let me just make a one-liner. And I get these phone calls every week, and I'll say, look, you call Mike in 15 minutes. He'll run a credit report over the phone if you agree. He'll tell you where you stand, what you can or cannot qualify for, so you know what you can do. There's nothing like going out and looking for a $300,000 house when you can't qualify for it. So all you can qualify is for $150,000 or $200,000, which means that's what you're going to get, or you wait. And he'll help you move right along into doing that. So the guy has just done magnificent things for people. And I want to talk, we got more to go on here.
Well, I had a few other interesting things I thought the listeners would appreciate. For example, alimony.
Okay.
Anything, it says any divorce executed after December 31 of 18 now, that's next year, that they would not be deductible by the payor. Then they're not income.
Alimony won't be deductible?
That's correct. After 18, be like 19
and
January.
And
is the other person getting it wouldn't have income, so it's sort of a wash.
Well, one person
from the IRS's point of view,
let me just tell you, whoever is collecting the alimony is happy, and whoever's paying it is not.
Exactly. And the other thing is the sale of your residence. The good news is they kept the exclusion.
Perfect.
For the sale of the residences.
Let's talk about that for 1 minute. A lot of people don't know that. Just refresh how
that
works.
Well, you know how it works. If you've lived in your house, in fact, they were going to change the length of time that you needed to live in a house. They didn't talk about that. So apparently, they didn't change it. If you lived in your house two out of the last 5 years, then you're entitled, if you're a married couple filing jointly, you could exclude up to $500,000 of gain on that house.
So if you made a profit,
you
of
made
a
profit,
$500,000, no tax.
It would be no tax on the first $500,000 of profit.
That's it.
And if you're a single person or married separate, it would be $250,000.
So they kept it.
So they kept it. So that's good news. I think that was a big benefit, a very,
big
benefit.
One, yeah.
The other thing here we talked about, there's one other thing I want to bring up. Oh, a couple of things. Casualty losses, this they did stick in there. You know how people have damage to their property,
sure,
et cetera. They don't get covered by insurance. Well, they're going to eliminate all losses. You cannot deduct losses that are not connected to a federally declared disaster area. So, for example, we were here for Hurricane Irma.
So it has to be
a federally declared.
Otherwise, you can't claim. You don't
get any deductions for casualties.
So if you had a $10,000 deductible, you could claim it, but now you can't unless it was declared a federal disaster.
Exactly. Like even with Irma now, they're allowing them to take above-the-line deductions for casualty losses.
Uh-huh.
This is an itemized deduction,
okay,
but they're not even letting you do that unless it's federally declared. So that's it. And then the last thing, I don't know how many people this applies to in our listening area, but if you have home mortgage interest deduction is only going to be allowed up to $750,000 of principal.
So if your loan is $750,000 and you pay 5% interest, that would be deducted.
That would be deductible up to that $750,000. But say you had $1 million mortgage, then only the first $750,000 of that mortgage would be deductible.
So the interest on $250,000 would not be deductible.
And the last thing, which I think the listeners should know, and this is not a great thing because a lot of people use them, home equity loans. they're not going to be deducting. The interest is going to be repealed.
No
loan
kidding.
Interest deduction, yeah.
Well, that was quite a gift for a lot of people, the home equity loans. Yeah. I mean, declaring the interest as a
but
deduction.
But all these things, Joe, all these things sunset in 2025.
So in other words, these deductions are
all
gone.
These things that they're gone now could be coming back again in 7 years.
So this is not a permanent tax change, these things?
No.
Now, when they say the word permanent, it doesn't ever mean really permanent, but it means they go away automatically by a certain
you don't
date.
Have to have an act of Congress to change it when it's permanent.
Yeah.
When I say that, like, for example, they had certain extenders, like in the past with these deductions for equipment acquisitions.
Right.
They every year, because it wasn't permanent, so every year the Congress would have to vote, how much are we going to allow businesses to deduct this year?
There you go.
And they'd have to do it retroactive, which means a lot of companies didn't know where they stood during the year. So they made those permanent 2 years ago. So that's what I mean by permanent. You don't have to keep going back to the Congress to get relief. It's permanent, but this is not permanent, but for 8 years.
Well, you know, if it stimulates the economy and makes things happen, and things get moving in a good line and they start making a dent in the deficit, they may be able to keep more of these deductions for the average person. Gross domestic product.
I just have one more point before I lose it, and then I'll let you move on. There's something else that came out in the law that's very, very important to families with young children, particularly school-age kids. You can now establish a 529 plan, but as you know, under existing law, the 529s were only good for secondary education.
Right.
And so you could invest the money today. It would grow. You wouldn't be taxed on the growth as long as you used it for education, and that usually is secondary college, usually. Now, under this new law, it's going to apply to elementary and secondary schools.
Weird. Unusual. Yeah. Not a bad thing.
No.
But here the key is.
But they excluded homeschooling.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, which is interesting too.
Well, it's a wrinkle.
Yeah.
I'm looking for the practicality of this thing. How many people can afford a 529 plan to put money aside for their kids to go to school that are going right now?
This is true, but you could put it away. And let's say you just got a newborn.
Yeah.
And you got 5 years,
six years before they go to school.
You could pop that money in.
But you
in
don't have
year.
To use it for elementary, but you could.
You could.
You could save it for secondary
use it for elementary school, use it for
anything
middle school,
on a,
secondary.
Well, that could be good. Now, but it does. What about grandparents doing that?
That's a good question. I don't think that the 529
it's only going to
work for the parents.
Just the parents. Vince, what about charitable deductions? Is there an upper limit?
Yes, there is, and I'm glad you brought that up. I was trying not to take up too much time today. But they're going to increase it. They always kept it. It was in the law, and they're never going to change it, but they upped it to 60%. You can deduct now up to 60% of your adjusted gross in cash.
So if you made $100,000 a year, you could give away $60,000, right?
Yeah, you give away 60% of it, yeah.
And that would be a tax deduction.
Correct.
Charitable giving. Well, you know what? This could help some charities.
Well, you know, they couldn't touch it. That's like a third rail when you talk about charitable giving.
Time,
if they were going to eliminate that was almost as bad as eliminating mortgage deductions.
Yeah.
They got away with state and local, which surprises me.
Amazes me.
Up to 10, they only got 10,000 cap on what they can deduct. You know what people pay up in the north?
Oh, boy.
For state and local state. I talk about state income.
What is it, 8% state tax in
New York? Well, in New York, for example, the max rate, I think, is 8.8%.
If you make $200,000 times 8, that's $16,000 a year. You can't deduct now.
Right. You could deduct up to 10 in the pot. You put in the pot income taxes, and you put your property taxes in the same bucket.
Oh.
So you put your income tax, $10,000 total, and that's the cap on
now,
that.
What if you're a single person? Is it still 10?
No, it's still, yeah. It's
now, if you're married, you get $20,000 then?
No.
Mm-mm.
So might pay to get divorced. I'm joking, but I'm not. So if you own a house, what if you let's it's your primary residence, right?
Right.
Okay. If you and I buy a house, you and I, Vince, and we're our primary residence, we're partners in that, and we file our taxes separately, we could conceivably take $10,000 each, right? Maybe.
No, because you can only, the cap is how much of the actual out-of-pocket expenses that you incur. I see what you're saying. Let's say the property's taxes is $20,000.
That's my point.
Well, yeah, I guess conceivably, yes.
Well, we'll find out as this thing evolves.
See, they're going to take, this is what I'm talking about. There'll be regulations on all this.
Well, you know, there's loopholes almost always.
There's loopholes all over the place.
And very often the loopholes get plugged, but sometimes people can use them for a period of time.
But there's other implications to being divorced. If you're only doing it for this, you know, you might be excluded from other benefits down the road.
Well, that's my question. You know, we just don't know what the answers are.
How about medical if you're not married anymore? How about if you work for a company that provides medical for you and your spouse?
Yeah.
And you're divorced because you want to save 10 grand off the tax.
Well, she needs to get a better job. 1-888-221-8990. Did I see some thought process down there, Alan?
Yeah, I was just wondering, when you look at what has been done with the passage of this bill, the bottom line, I think, as far as the next year is concerned, as far as the midterm elections in November of 18, is if the people really see the benefit of what was done, presumably I would think that the Republicans won't lose as many seats as normal in an off-year election.
Yeah, yeah.
But if this doesn't work, it could
hurt
them badly. So there's a political component that
big
we're
time.
Just going to have to watch over the
big
next
time.
Year.
Well, as the thing evolves and it gets defined, more and more news will come out for the definition, and you'll be reporting just about every week on what's going on with this thing as it keeps coming down.
This is just the structure the plan.
Right.
There'll be a lot of flesh to be fleshed, as they say, to flesh it out over time. There'll
right.
be regulation.
So in other words, Vince, you have job security guaranteed for the next
year.
The
account and retirement.
The account, income, and retirement act.
Because we were talking before, year three, for the last 5 years, about a flat tax, where everything was flat and all, national sales tax would eliminate accountants. And Vince says, it'll never happen.
And if Bryant is listening out there,
yep.
You can't fit it on a postcard.
Right. Another 70,000 pages. Simplified. Let's simplify.
It's the simplified method.
Well, it depends how big your postcard is. If your postcard is 300 feet by 100 feet, you can probably
put
do
quite
it.
A bit on that. 1-888-221-8990. I want to talk about a subject that I talk about occasionally on it, but I've had two cases this last week where people just didn't know what we take for granted, and the word is annuities. Now, even Alan, special guest star Alan, up until a couple, 3 years ago, or a year ago, or 6 months ago, really didn't understand exactly how annuities work. Is that fair?
Yes.
I want to make it simple for him, get a quick yes or no. Now, attorneys normally don't give you a simple yes or no. They've got usually a couple of paragraphs in there with caveats. But he's retired, so I can get straight answers from him. I want to talk about basically three different types of annuities. First one is called an immediate. Now, I usually use the word pension. You retire from a company, let's say General Motors or somebody. You sit down with your plan people and they say, okay, fine, we're going to give you a check every month for the rest of your life. Okay, fine. What happens if I die and if I got only one check? Well, nobody gets a dime, but you get a bigger check. Maybe you're going to get $2,000 a month. But if you say, okay, fine, but I want to make sure my wife would get the same check in case I died, well, then you're only going to get $1,700 or $1,800, and it'll be whoever lives longer would keep getting that check. Or you might add another wrinkle in called, give me a check every month for the rest of my life, but no less than 10 years. So if I died during the 10 years, somebody else would keep getting that check. But if I don't die, I keep getting the check until I die. So each time you add a wrinkle into this, quote, pension, normally the dollar figure you're going to get on a monthly basis goes down because they're calculating two or three or four different things. One, how old you are. Two, male or female. Three, how much money we're talking about. And four, the then current interest rate. So they plug all that into the computer and the computer spits out and says, fine, we're going to give you, Dave, a check every month for the rest of your life. And if you die, your wife will get it. Well, we're going to make it for no less than 15 years. Well, you can forget that $2,000 a month. Now you're down to about $1,000 a month because they're going to guarantee it for 15 years no matter what, or for the life of whoever lives. So that's called an immediate, a pension. Next, fixed annuity. Fixed annuity is pretty simple. to give you an interest rate. This is just very similar to going to the bank. The fixed interest rate says we're going to pay you, and right now 3% appears to be the going number, and that might get a little better. Some companies will say, fine, we'll pay you this 3% every year for the next 5, 6, 7 years, the term of the contract. And at the end of that time, it's over. You can re-up it if you want, or you can just take your money and leave or roll it to somebody else. But a fixed annuity pays an interest rate, just that simple. Now, that interest rate can be the same for the whole period, or it can change every year. If it changes every year, normally they'll put a floor in that it can never go below. Okay? So we got two different ways to go. Fixed, solid number for a solid period of time, or fixed 1 year at a time with a floor that it can never go lower than. Now, why would that become good? Well, if they take the money that you're putting in and invest it in a series of investments that are not fixed, that might change and go up, there's a possibility it can go up. If, on the other hand, these investments go down, that's why they put a floor in there, so that you can't ever go below the minimum. Next, they have what's called a fixed index annuity. Now, most of these programs are extremely complicated. They're very difficult to understand. A lot of broker-dealers like mine, they frown on a lot of these instruments. They say there's many they will not let us as representatives represent. The fixed index annuity says we're going to pay you interest based on an index. Normally the index might be the Standard & Poor's 500. It could be any number of other indexes. One of the things that happens, though, on most of these that most people have not heard is they have what's called caps, C-A-P, where they cap the amount of money that you can get paid. So very often they make it look like there's a good chance you'll make 10 or 12 or 15%, but very often the caps, I've seen them as low as 2%. I don't care what the index pays, you can't make more than 2, or you might not make more than 3. Some of these companies allow the cap to be reset at their criteria, the company's criteria, not yours. And I think, boy, that really sounds wonderful. I have no protection at all, except I'll have a floor again, because it's a fixed. You're always going to have a floor. The floor might be 1%. You say, I mean, I can get as low as 1 and I can get as much as 2 or 3 or 4? Maybe. But the key is this. These are very complicated instruments. They're difficult to understand. How do I phrase this gently? I don't like any of them personally. I've not found one that really is to the benefit of the client. I've seen some of them that might go 7 or 8 or 10 years out, but you can't touch them for that whole period of time. So you might get it strictly to set up a pension at the end. That might work. But in the meantime, if you wanted to get the money out in that 7 or 8 or 10, it'd be a severe penalty. So it's not user-friendly that I can. I've had a hard time finding one that fits anybody. So normally I caution people, you want to look at them. And what I oftentimes, when I tell somebody that says they have such a thing, is don't talk to an agent. Call the company directly. Get a person on the phone. But you need to know the questions to ask. And I've sat with many people, and we've got on the phone and put a speaker phone, and they've given me permission to talk, and I ask the questions so that the client knows what they have. Okay. First two I consider good. The immediate, which is a pension. The second one, which is fixed, you know exactly what you're getting. You're getting an interest rate. There's no smoke and mirrors. The index annuity I have problems with. The last one is the variable annuity. Now, this gets more complicated also. But the variable annuity basically takes real investments, which look like mutual funds. They're not called mutual funds when they're in an annuity, but they look and smell just like them. You can be invested in the S&P 500. You can be invested in the Dow. You can be invested in the NASDAQ. And literally, people in the last 12 months that were in these instruments were making 20 and 25%, just what the index was making, because they were invested totally in those stocks. Now, what happens is with most of these variable annuities, they do insurance on the other side, so in case the market falls apart, there are guarantees to protect you. Two things. One is a death benefit. Very often these contracts say, here's what we'll do. Whatever you put into this, we'll have a death benefit that is 5% per year. So if you put $100,000 in, let's use an example, and the market never goes up or goes down, you decide to die, I forget that word, decide.
You decide to die?
Yeah, right. You die, and you say you've been in it for 3 years, and the market fell apart, and you're down to 50 or 60,000 in market value. Well, your heirs, your beneficiaries, would get the 100,000 plus 5% a year. So you're protecting your family with the death benefit. The same contract very often says, here's what we'll do. You put in this 100,000, and by the way, usually the minimum is 10,000, but you put in 100,000, and depending on your age, we will give you a 5% income per year on that 100,000 for the rest of your life. And then once a year, the market goes up. Once a year on the anniversary, if the market went up, they'll recast it, reset it. So like last year, the market's up 20%. That 100,000 would be 120. The new guarantee now is 5% on 120. And the market goes down, you don't go down, you stay at that 120 until it goes higher than that. Once a year, they recast it on the anniversary date. So what the annuity contract does, it allows people to be in the market, to share in the benefit of a good market. But on the other hand, if the market collapses, it protects your family in case you happen to die on the wrong day when the market's down, and it also protects you having guaranteed income for the rest of your life. Now, my compliance people say, whenever you talk about annuities, we have to say you have to know the claims paying ability of the company. So the only companies I use are the highest rated companies, period. I just refuse to deal with anybody that's not a high rated company. So the concept of annuity, in fact, I'm talking to a fellow right now, and sophisticated investor, he's got a lot of money. He had never thought about it. He'd heard negatives about it. So we went through the program, and I said, look, he's 65 years old. I said, if you were 40, I wouldn't be talking to you about this. But you're 65. You're almost past your shelf life. Any day, you could be gone. Let's face it. So the odds of starting over again because you made a bad decision are not too good looking, because your body gets a little tired when you get old. Vince, you might remember that.
Oh, I forgot. I don't know what you're talking about.
Alan, you reminded me. I know. The key I'm trying to say is that the younger person might have some more time to make multiple decisions. And I've had many people say, Joe, I don't want all my money in that annuity. I want to put it in something else where I can make more money or at least have a higher risk. And that's fine. Sometimes you can divvy up your money into different piles. Some might be higher risk, some lower risk.
Is there any rules of thumb these days, Joe?
I'm sorry?
Are there any rules of thumb for allocation of your retirement assets?
The answer is no. Let's say there's 100 options inside of here. 100. There's bonds, which obviously we've talked about bonds being a bad investment right now because interest rates go up, bonds go down. So I discourage people from that. There are called balanced funds, which are part bonds and part equities, part stock. I discourage those too. I like to talk about things that the average person knows and sees on a daily basis. The S&P 500. Every time you turn on the news, the Standard & Poor's 500 is talked about on a daily basis. The Dow, which is 30 companies, that's talked about on a daily basis. The NASDAQ, which is heavily loaded with tech companies, is talked about on a daily basis. So most of the people that I talk to about getting into that type of investment, I say, let's go with the indexes, and you can watch it every day, and you'll know where you stand every day, and it's easy to understand. You get into a Japanese fund or a Pacific Rim fund, it's almost impossible to know exactly what's in there because there's no rhyme or reason for how that money's invested. And it might do better, but you should be a bit more sophisticated to allocate a portion of your money into that. And it's harder to anticipate good news or bad news. Like right now, Europe is doing pretty good. Well, how do we know that? Well, because we read it in the paper. But if you are an aficionado that only studies European stock markets and European economies, you know what you're doing. But hey, we're in America. We know what America's doing, and that's hard enough to
figure out. It's hard enough to know what we're doing.
Yep.
Joe, let me ask a couple of questions about the variable annuity.
Sure.
Because you've talked about it before on previous shows.
Right.
With the way the markets have been, let's say that you've had the variable annuity for a number of years. You started with $100,000. You're now up to $250,000.
Okay.
Say, and you don't have any penalty to remove money now because
right.
you've been in it a number of years.
Right.
If you wanted to get out of that annuity at this point because you thought the market may come down.
Right.
And are you able to hold that money for a while without paying taxes on it? Or if you withdraw, do you have to go into an annuity almost immediately?
Two or three good questions there. And the answer is this. His question was, I put $100,000 into this annuity and 10 years later, let's just use it. There's no more penalties, which I forgot to mention. When you go into an annuity, almost always all your money goes to work for you the first day. They hold nothing out for commissions, fees, or expenses, but there are commissions, fees, and expenses. So the insurance company wants you to stick around for a while so they can make money too. But usually after a period of time, 7 or 8 years, the penalties are gone. So now we're using an example. The penalties are gone. We put in 100, now it's worth 250. You can take the whole 250 out, spend it. You will pay tax on the gain. And if it's an IRA, every dime of it is subject to tax because none of it has been taxed. Now, you also can do change your allocations inside of that contract to get more conservative. In other words, you could go into strictly a money market account, and many of these offer a fixed account inside of it. So let's say the fixed account pays 2 or 3%. Let's just say that. Mm. And you've got now 250 and you're scared. You say, hey, let me take half of it or all of it or three-fourths of it and put it into the fixed account. You can do that. And you can come back out of the fixed account. Now, there's different rules for how long, but basically there's no penalties. So you can move the money around. Most companies allow 12 or so moves a year, but you can reallocate your money to different places.
12 moves within the fund?
Within the contract.
Contract, year. Okay.
So you can go into 12. You can make 12 different reallocations per year, sometimes 15, sometimes 20. Some companies allow more, but most people don't reallocate that often. This is not what you call active trading.
And by contract year, you're talking about your contract year. Like, say I started an annuity on May 1st, right. Then I would have 12 opportunities to change allocations between May 1st and April 30th of the next year.
Answer is yes. Okay. Now, this is assuming that contract has 12. Most of the ones have 12 or more. So, I mean, that's it. The other sides of the coin is you also can 1035 exchange or transfer all that money out into another contract if it's to your benefit. Now, why would you do that? Let's just take an example right here. Let's say we put in that $100,000, but now it's worth $250,000. But the death benefit only got it up to $150,000 because that's what it did. Well, you can transfer that $250,000 to a new contract and start a new death benefit with $250,000. And it could be to your advantage to do that. So literally, the 1035 exchange means from annuity to annuity. A transfer, it could be an IRA. It doesn't have to be in an annuity, but it can be. And you can roll over or transfer that money to another existing or new IRA. And look at the bells and whistles, the benefits, but you have to throw into this whole picture, how old am I? Do I have a spouse? Do I have children? What's my goal? What's my objective to make all of this happen?
Can you cross the investments, Joe? Can you take out of an IRA and put it into an annuity, 1035?
Well, if it's in an existing IRA, you definitely can transfer the money into an annuity, and it's still an IRA.
Ah. As long as it still classifies an IRA.
It's always an IRA.
You can't close the IRA and then purchase an annuity with the money.
Well,
escape taxation.
Remember the 60-day rule?
Yeah. Yeah, you got to reinvest in another IRA.
You got to invest it in another IRA.
So an annuity doesn't qualify as an alternative.
Yes, it does. It is an IRA. An IRA is an IRA. If you transfer it or roll it over into an annuity contract, it's still an IRA. It's always an IRA. Tax-free exchange now. I move my money out of a bank account IRA.
Right.
And I put it into an annuity.
Which is part of another IRA.
Which is part of another.
Then it's transfer to transfer. But what if it's not that second, that annuity is not part of an IRA?
Well,
you just buy a new annuity contract.
Well, here's what you do. Now you're 100% of that money is subject to tax.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Under no circumstances would I ever suggest, recommend,
I
nothing.
Had a client come in and did that, and they wanted me to make it a tax-free exchange. I told him I couldn't do it.
Well, after the fact, he's got 60 days to
but well, other than the person who sold him the annuity told him it was okay.
Oh, Lord, save me.
Well, I lost a client over it because they didn't believe me. So go to another professional and ask them.
Go to anybody.
Yeah, go to anybody.
Well, he got lied to, and he wanted to believe the liar.
Right.
And I understand, because he's now got to pay a big chunk of tax because a mistake was made.
And he didn't want to do it.
Well, the rules are pretty simple, and the three, four of us know. If we have an existing IRA, we never want to really cash it in and put the money someplace else, because now it's a big red flag to the government, even though the government says we have 60 days to reinvest that money as long as it's put into another IRA. Now, that IRA can be inside of an annuity, it can be a bank CD, it can be into a brokerage account, there can be all kinds of different places you can put it. But what you've done is raised a flag by taking the cash out, because the people you took it from will report to the IRS that you took it in cash, that you cashed it in. Even though you have 60 days to do it, you might get an audit. Well, you may very well get at least a letter, and you have to come back and prove that that money was put into within that time frame. So almost always, we roll it, or transfer is the word, from one IRA to another IRA, whether it's in a bank account, brokerage account, annuity, it makes no difference.
That's a 1035, right?
1035 is for non-qualified money, meaning not an IRA. So let's say, back to Alan's example, we have $100,000 we put in, was our own money. It's already been taxed, but now it's worth $250,000. I now can take that whole $250,000 out of one annuity and transfer it to another annuity, and that's now called a 1035 exchange. So that means it's tax-free. When you go into an annuity, the reasons you do it, number one, it's tax-deferred. There's no taxes until you take money out. Number two, it's only ordinary income tax, no other form of tax. Number three, big deal, it's not subject to probate. When you die, it doesn't go through the courts. And number four, very, very important, it's not subject to attachment by creditors. You'll find a lot of people in high-risk occupations, surgical doctors, etc., that will put money into annuity contracts, so in case they get sued, that money cannot be taken away from them. So there's lots of reasons to have these vehicles. The key is education. You have to learn how it works and how you're protected. And it's not easy. The simple ones I told you at the beginning, the variable has some moving parts, but that can give you a much better option or a chance to make money. The index annuity, I just can't find a way to justify those at all.
Just as an aside, Joe, on the 1031s.
Yeah, no, which is real estate.
They're restricting it to real estate under the new law. You could do it on personal property.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't know that. I always thought it was real estate.
Everybody does, but no, it applied to all personal property.
Uh-huh.
Now they closed the loophole with the new tax law. It's only real estate, 1031s.
You remember that one that wanted to do the real estate IRA? I wonder,
IRA. Yeah.
Is that still?
They haven't touched that, as far as I know. You can still do it. Self-directed. It's a self-directed IRA. Right.
Mm-hmm. There's rules, but and I'm sure it brings up a big flag.
You can't self-deal. Go ahead.
We got a caller. We got a minute left. Caller, Joe Martek. You're on the radio.
Hi, Mr. This is Barbara.
Hi, Barbara.
I want to ask if you have a retirement. And no, not a retirement, a 401k.
Right.
And the company that you're working with no longer carries 401k, so they give you the money back, and they said that it's already been taxed. Will you be taxed again at the end of the year for getting the lump sum?
No, but how long ago did you get the lump sum?
Maybe about October.
Did you roll it over?
Did you roll it into an IRA, or did you just put it in the bank?
Put it in the bank.
And you did not put it into an individual retirement account, right?
No.
And here was one last question. We've got to stop now, but I'm going to talk to you over the air, but there's a 60-day window. Are we done? We've got to leave you.
We're done.
I will talk to you off the
road. God bless you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Team Martek program. The Team Martek program is a paid program. The content was provided by HF Martek. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership were not responsible for its content. Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA and SIPC, and Michael Paulus with East Coast Mortgage Lenders, NMLS number 353429. Tune in next Wednesday at 4 p.m. for the Team MarTech program here on WCNO 89.9 FM. For more information, Team MarTech is available at 772-678-7725.
Every heart your cross redeemed, for every triumph over sin, for every time you gave us strength, for every time your love broke in, for every time you spared us and delivered.